We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
We continue our West Virginia Zoom meetings with men's soccer coach Dan Stratford. Hear what he has to say coming up right after this.
West Virginia fans, stay up to date on all things Mountaineers at WVUSports.com. WVUSports.com has 24/7 access to all of your favorite Mountaineer teams. The site's modern design provides the same fan-friendly experience on a mobile phone as it does on a desktop computer. Watch videos, listen to podcasts, and read feature stories anytime, anyplace. WVUSports.com, the official home of the West Virginia Mountaineers.
Dan, you started at WVU on January 20th and got a little bit into your spring season before the news came down. Why don't you start off the media call here by recapping the last 3.5 months for you and your program?
Yeah, I think obviously came in with intentions to have a really progressive spring in terms of working with the current roster, firstly from an assessment perspective to see them play, not just train. That was, I guess, somewhat dampened with obviously our current pandemic. But we'd made some really good progress over the course of probably 6 weeks to 2 months. And until obviously we found ourselves in the situation we do. I think the good news was we'd made really significant strides from a recruiting perspective in that time. I think we've been able to finish out the recruiting class very successfully in light of what's happened and our inability to perhaps travel and meet firsthand under some circumstances. But essentially that's been the same for everyone. And then in more recent times, obviously, from my perspective, making sure that we're still developing those relationships with the current roster and the recruiting class. So we've stayed in regular communication with the players, you know, trying to build that collective culture between the staff and the players over the course of, yeah, certainly the last month or so, given what's happened. So it hasn't been ideal, but I think I feel like we're making the best of a bad situation and are obviously incredibly optimistic now that things are starting to, at least conversations are happening for what the fall may look like and getting back to some sense of normalcy.
All right, first question, Joe Mitchin.
Hey, Coach, this is a question that was submitted by Bob Hertzel, and that is, can you discuss the frustrations of being a new coach, you know, getting a big-time break, then putting all that on hold before you could really even get started. You know, it's a time that you and your team should be bonding and learning each other, and you really are unable to do any of that, let alone putting in your system and getting used to that. So it has to be tougher on you than maybe some coaches and players that have kind of been with each other for a while.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're looking to implement maybe a different culture than what was here before and your own playing style, I have the opinion that you can be incredibly productive during the spring semester. I know of other coaches and others in the business that maybe disregard this time or perhaps don't stress as much emphasis on this time. But I think in light of obviously the coaching change and me being new to the program, we had a clear vision of what we wanted this spring to look like. And without a doubt, that has been disrupted. But it's also been disruptive for everyone across the country. So, as I said, in light of that, you kind of roll with the punches, so to speak, and try and make the best of a bad situation. It would have obviously been fantastic for the team to have had 5 games this spring, which were scheduled, and to see some development there. And if you like, see what the players were made of during some what would have been some really competitive games. We haven't had that opportunity. We were maybe fortunate to get one game in just before this really broke. But again, to say, you know, express frustration and things like that, you know, these are circumstances that were, you know, beyond my control, and you just have to kind of accept it, move on, and deal with that adversity as best you can. And then obviously feel like we have a plan in place to... you know, to make as many strides as we can and still feel like we get to August, most importantly, in the best position that we possibly can from a mentality standpoint, from a physical standpoint. So, you know, that's now the vision. It's slightly changed in terms of the objective now. And now we turn our attention to hopefully starting back up in August with a full roster, and with the players as mentally prepared and as bought into to this environment and this culture as possible.
All right, your next question comes from Nick Farrell. Go ahead, Nick.
Coach, thanks for taking the time to do this. We really appreciate it. Even though you can't hold training in a traditional sense right now, there are still ways that you as a new coach can get to know your players. Can you give us a sense of how you've been trying to keep up with your athletes over the last month and a half? And what have you learned about your team so far?
Yeah, so funnily enough, you're interrupting a couple of meetings that I would have had today. What we've done on Mondays is split the roster, the current returning roster, between the three coaches, myself, Andy, and Nick, and that rotates every Monday. So, you know, I'll speak to 6 or 7 guys on a Monday. Andy and Nick the same. We'll then reconvene and discuss anything, and that rotates every week. So, the players, the returning players, have had a familiar face, shall we say, every Monday from the coaching staff. And then similarly, we do the same on Wednesday with our committed recruits or our signed recruits as well. And similarly, they rotate as well. So if they speak to me 1 week, it won't be for another 3 weeks that they hear from me again. That's been quite beneficial because, you know, firstly, I want there to be, you know, that unanimous sense amongst the staff that we are building relationships collectively, and that we're in sync in regards to our communication with the players. I think one of the things that we've challenged, certainly I've challenged the players to do, is to see this as an opportunity to maybe pick up an additional hobby, learn something, or develop a skill that they didn't have before, and see this as, okay, while it's frustrating that we're not on campus and we're not training and playing, what's maybe something that they've always liked the sound of, like the idea of, that they haven't been able to commit the time to, that now they inevitably do have the time to try and achieve. So that's been quite entertaining to listen to some of the feedback the players have given us from that perspective on their hobbies and different things like that. An incredibly common question might be what they're watching on Netflix at the moment, and I can assure you they're doing plenty of that too. So it is a sense of making them continue to feel more and more comfortable with the staff and, if you like, with the change. And then, you know, a couple of other things that we've had in place and we'll continue to work on. We hosted a quiz a couple of weeks ago, which went down really, really well with the guys via Zoom, and we had the families involved as well. So that was good fun. And we'll keep that up as well. Those are more from a, if you like, that social interaction and again, that level of comfort and familiarity with the staff. We've also rolled out some other initiatives and ideas on having the players look at, with a bit more reflection on last season and where they want to be come August and what those objectives look like from an individual standpoint and their personal development as well. So, as I said, trying to make the best of a bad situation, it would be certainly far more convenient for us to all be in the same place and doing that from campus. But thanks to Zoom and other social media and video platforms, we've been able to feel like we're still interacting with the players on a fairly regular basis.
All right, your next question. Go ahead, Coach Hunter.
So, Dan, it sounded like you got some work in the spring. What did you see during that work? And then what are the things that you really thought you missed because you obviously had to cut it short?
Yeah, I think firstly from a training perspective, incredibly coachable group. But that was really, really encouraging. I remember thinking back to the interview process when I met with the two captains at the time, Stephen Tokeski and Kevin Morris. You know, one of the things that they felt was really strong within the group was that locker room, the culture within the group. And that was apparent to me very early on in my time. They bought into, some changes in what we've done tactically, which I certainly appreciate how coachable they've been from that standpoint. But the game doesn't always translate when you go from training directly into a game, certainly not in the format of the spring. So we weren't quite as good as we could have been when we played UMBC for the first game in the spring and really felt like that was going to be a platform for something to build on and show that what they had shown in training could translate when it came to a game day, when it came to slightly different pressure and obviously a different opponent as to playing against one another in training. So we really would have benefited from having those additional fixtures and showing the learning curve and the progress that not only we would have made tactically, but what they would have made in terms of their levels of confidence, which again was something that I really wanted to stress that and emphasize that to the players. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter too much what we do as coaches. If the players feel comfortable and feel confident going into the game, then we'll have a pretty good chance of being successful. And I think that those were some of the strides that I really felt like we could take this spring and perhaps we're certainly cut short in light of, the pandemic.
Your next question from Derek Red. Go ahead, Derek.
Hey, Dan. I didn't get to see you before you left Charleston. Congratulations on the new gig, man.
Thanks very much.
Hey, you haven't been bashful or reticent in changing up what you do to fit the folks you have. Do you have enough time in the spring to kind of get an idea of what this team, this roster is going to be? And if not, how much are you chomping at the bit to do that? And are you worried that a compressed schedule might be a big hurdle for that?
I think firstly, with what, if you like, what I inherited for the spring, we had to take a look at, all I could work with was exactly what I had here and now. So we did make some changes this spring that fit what we perceive to be the strengths of this group currently. And as you know, that can change substantially through a recruiting class. So I was pleased with, again, how adaptable the players were and how coachable they were to something that they conceivably had never worked on before in terms of the system that we put in place. It would have been certainly nice to work on that for a little bit longer. I do think that is an option for us going into the full semester as well. But I've always been of the opinion that you recruit the best players and the best people that you can. Of course, you have a sense of what you need positionally. But until you have that here on campus, to make assumptions on exactly what you're going to do, I think is to be a little naive maybe. In an ideal world, we'll have a full preseason with a full roster with all our recruits coming in, and then we'll make decisions on, okay, how do we make the system of play, the style of play, fit the strengths of the individuals that we have here on campus. I guess that aspect of things is very much up in the air right now, just with the number of international recruits that we plan to bring in. So again, we'll see. That'll remain to be determined based on obviously what happens with a number of things for those international players, and then exactly what players are here come day one of preseason.
Your next question from John Antonic. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, curious. You mentioned international players with the travel restrictions. How has that impacted what you've done? I know you have a lot of connections in Europe. I noticed that your signing class, you announced domestic kids back in April, I guess, mm-hmm. eight total. How has that impacted? And the second question I have is there still – there was the momentum to having the spring, the fall and the spring, the schedule, all of that. Has that gone in limbo with everything that's going on? What are you hearing on that now?
To answer your first question, I think, you know, it's tough to say exactly how it's going to impact things, because there is a scenario that we're obviously very optimistic for, which has them all here at the start of the season, and we're sort of carrying on as per usual. It was always going to be incredibly difficult to put in any type of contingency plan from a recruiting perspective because of the timing of that transition from a staffing perspective and the reality, quite honestly, that you know, when you get to January, February, there's a very, very good chance that the majority of the most talented domestic players have already been recruited, already signed NLIs. So we were glad to squeeze the additions that we did domestically within that recruiting class. And then obviously we're very, very happy with the international recruiting class that we've brought in. My hope is obviously that, as we've seen within this country, certain states have gone into phase one and some states are further ahead than others. I believe that'll be the case within Europe and within across the world, that, you know, some people are going to have the peak of their pandemic at different times to others. So we're monitoring very closely what those respective countries that we have recruits coming in from are doing and kind of where they are in their process. And again, I'm certainly cautiously optimistic that some things will open back up to allow them to be here for the start of the season. To say there's a contingency plan would be incredibly challenging because of just simply where we are in this process in light of kind of when this came to fruition, the true sense of reality of how serious and significant this was. We were probably too far along with our recruiting class at that point to really pump the brakes and then go in a different direction. Yeah, we're fully committed to the group of players that we have coming in, regardless of what country they're coming from, and certainly incredibly optimistic as to the talent and the quality that we have coming in to help supplement the team. If you wouldn't mind repeating your second question, that was a bit more of a substantial answer than I expected to give you, maybe.
Okay, I'm unmuted there. But the second question was, the momentum that was within this sport to have the dual the spring and the fall and spring schedule, mm-hmm. how that was going to overlay. Has that kind of gone in limbo now with the coronavirus and so forth?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to have to an extent. I think there's another really important piece there specific to men's soccer, which is the what was formerly known as the PDL season or now the USL2 season, the players' ability to play over the summer. You know, that was something that a significant percentage of our roster would have been doing, and something that I certainly valued back in my time as a student athlete and now as a coach, the students' ability to go into a different environment over the summer and still play a quality level similar to that of the collegiate level that they would experience at WVU, and to come into the season even more prepared than perhaps where they are. I think that the significant concern is, and I think this is across the board for athletics, is, you know, what does the student athlete look like that shows up in August, given the restrictions and given their ability and access to certain things that we took for granted, like a gym and a weight room. And now we're in a situation where these student athletes and prospective student athletes just simply aren't playing soccer, not in the context that they have before. So, we'll have some challenges to overcome there. We'll be very, very conscious of the workload and where certain players are. And I think that's just going to take even greater scrutiny than it did before in terms of our planning going into the season. So there's certainly a sense of limbo and a sense of, kind of waiting to find out what's happening, which can be quite frustrating. But I do think there are signs over the last 2 weeks that there is progress being made and the right types of questions are now being answered in a sense of, okay, what will it look like? What will campus look like come the fall? And how are we going to combat this? Because the other thing I would add to that is we simply cannot just live in a cave for the next 2 years and cross our fingers that a vaccine is coming for this. I think it's a sense of, we have to find a way to coexist with COVID. It's not going anywhere. And we have to be incredibly intelligent and measured with our approach, but also brave and brave enough to go back to work and to reintegrate into sports and to try and have some sense of normalcy as best as we can.
Next question from Nick Farrell. Go ahead, Nick.
Coach, what specifically are you encouraging your players to do in terms of conditioning and technique as they train remotely? And then maybe as a follow-up, is soccer a sport that can lend itself to individual training in a situation like this?
It's been incredibly contextual to the respective environment and what's been, what that respective student has had access to. In Spain, for example, I think it's only been until last week that they were even allowed out of the house. So I just got off the phone with Pau Jimenez. He's finally gone from running up his flight of stairs at home to work out to being able to go a kilometer around the block. So it was that piece has been very, very much based in the context of where they're located geographically, what respective state or country they're in, and what those limitations are for that location, and then what they have access to, what equipment do they have at home from a strength conditioning perspective, how much space do they have access to, even if it's quite simply in their back garden. Yes, there is certainly areas from an individual training perspective where these players can continue to develop and improve, but obviously, traditionally speaking, there's 22 players on the field and the game's going on all around you in about 120 by 80 yards of space, so there's no way to recreate that and no way to create that simulation on an individual standpoint. We've certainly encouraged them to take as many touches as possible. We've researched and looked into whether it's YouTube channels or other things on social media that might resonate with them and just again encourage and prompt them to get touches on the ball and to stay active. But there are certainly some limitations as to exactly what they can do to continue their development during this period of time, which again is going to raise greater concern for when they do return in August and we put them on that training field in that big space for the first time in a very, very long time. But it is what it is at this point, and if we get to that point where we're fortunate enough to do that, then I'll be very, very happy regardless of whether they last 5 minutes or 50. We'll combat that as we see it.
Your next question from Kevin Kendrick. Go ahead, Kevin.
Man, honestly, you have a lot of different challenges in building your roster. Another one is transfers and the fact that they can happen anytime. I think you've had something like six since you came on board. I know that you can't like immediately go out and replace them. Are there any changes that you would make, if you were in charge about, the transfer process on when you could do it or what you could do just to help colleges respond to it? And did you face this at UC at all?
I think there are some challenges. I think everyone would be a little naive to think that at times there aren't maybe conversations going on with a player and, another player from a different program and things like that. I think at the end of the day, you're dealing with young men, young adolescents who the emotional roller coaster perhaps that they can go on during their experience. When things are difficult, it's easy to look and go, okay, I'm going to go somewhere else. I'm going to find an opportunity elsewhere. I think Transfers can be incredibly important and relevant, and sometimes the face doesn't fit, and sometimes that's the right thing for the student athlete to do. So personally, I don't have a great deal of issue with it, because I think my approach is to be incredibly transparent with the student athlete from day one, from the recruiting process to, you know, once they are part of the program, and what our feedback is to the player. So if they then make the decision to transfer, it's with all the available information. I think it's those who are maybe less informed, but maybe the, you know, the student athlete may jump the gun in terms of what their decision is in terms of who they go and play for, or where they go to play. I think that's what, quite often what leads to student athletes transferring. Again, it's impossible to, and unrealistic to expect that your environment is going to be perfect for every single one of your student athletes. So I do think the ability to transfer is a positive. But I would say with the new transfer portal, I do feel like some student athletes have perhaps seen that almost like a transfer window, as it would relate to somewhere in Europe where, you know, it's this market and this shop window where you can go and be seen by all these other coaches. And that really isn't, to me, what the transfer portal is. It's essentially a list of names, and there's still an incredible amount of research and due diligence you have to do as a coach to determine if anyone on that list is actually someone that can help your program. So I think a few students maybe got carried away when that first initial switch on the transfer portal took place. But I do think it's a necessary and important piece of potentially a student athlete's 4-year experience to better themselves, whether it be academically or put themselves in a better environment athletically, or just one that fits them better. So I wouldn't necessarily say there are any substantial changes that I would make. Absolutely, I've dealt with student athletes that have requested to transfer and things of that nature. And in some cases, I support it. In others, you obviously try to encourage a student and inform them of why they should or would be better served staying at the program. But ultimately, it's you know, it needs to be with the well-being of the student athlete first and foremost. And if they're truly adamant that they see themselves as a better fit somewhere else, then I don't think you should necessarily get in the way of that.
Next question from Carly Nevis. Go ahead, Carly.
Hey, Coach, and kind of on the related note, you were able to bring in a couple of transfers, two local kids that you mentioned that you kind of had relationships with, and Ike from Fairmont Senior, mm-hmm. Elijah from Morgantown. What do those two guys specifically bring to the table, also having already some college experience?
Well, firstly, I can't take any credit for either of those two young men. They were here before I was. So those were both things that were well in place before I got offered the job and then stepped in. What was nice for me was my familiarity with both of them. I'd watched Ike over the summer because he happened to play USL2 in Charleston, West Virginia, which was obviously home for me at the time. My assistant coach at the time, Daniel Smee, was the head coach of the West Virginia Alliance team there. So I'd seen a good amount of Ike, and I can remember speaking to Andy Wright, the assistant coach here, and saying, you know, you've got a good one there. You've acquired a good player. Sean Teepen at Bowling Green is a really good friend and someone I work with at Charleston. And I spoke to Sean about that transfer and Ike coming to West Virginia, and he said the same thing. So we've been really, really happy with Ike. He's a really laid-back kid, a really, really happy kid as well. So he's fun to be around from that standpoint and has a lot of quality. I worked with both Ike and Elijah, I think, when they were 11 or 12 years old, which is a scary thought to think how long I've been here. But again, both talented players at a young age, and it's nice to see them back at their, you know, what should be their home team. They both grew up not here, not far from Morgantown. They both supported WVU from a university athletics perspective the majority of their lives. So to have them here, you hope it brings a passion and a sense of responsibility within the community as well. And you hope that is then, if you like, communicated, translated to players that come in from out of state, players that come in internationally, that they really get a full understanding of what it means to represent WVU, just how big this university is in the state, and you know what it means to the community and the fans to have fantastic athletics within this university. So I'm very, very happy to have them both here, and hopefully as they get older and develop through their time, I hope they take on more leadership, more responsibility from that standpoint, and really represent WVU the way that we would expect someone local to the area to do that.
All right, we got three more questions. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, Dan, thanks again for doing this. You mentioned, we're interrupting your meetings, Zoom meetings, I should say. All the coaches that we've spoken to kind of have a strategy as far as breaking, organizing the groups, like in football, they're doing position groups and accountability mm-hmm. groups. How have you kind of attacked that strategy? And quick follow-up, you also mentioned you encourage some interesting hobbies to be taken up by your players. What are the best ones that you've heard so far?
the strategy right now, I don't think it needs to correlate directly to the sport. We, as I said, we've implemented some things just in the last week, kind of starting to turn our attention back to soccer. I think the strategy over the first 6 weeks to a month of this was the well-being of the student, their academic progress, and essentially them not getting cabin fever and going too crazy, just being at home and being removed very, very quickly and quite suddenly from what their sense of normality was and their life on campus here at university. So really we adopted a strategy to up until this week of finals week to just focus mostly on academics and then their well-being, given the adjustment that everyone has had to go through. As I said, we've recently rolled something out which is a bit more specific to the sport and the direction that we feel like we're heading. I've always been an advocate for tactical videos and things of that nature. So the students have an incredible amount of access to those types of things right now, and some other video tools and learning tools that we've had in place for some time, thankfully, that they have access to, and that will continue to grow that library, if you like, of tactical videos and certain aspects of the game that I value and the staff value. Those will be things that we continue to provide for them over the course of the summer. And then to answer your second question, a few of the players have mentioned learning a second language, perhaps, learning the language of their heritage. So maybe, their grandfather or great grandfather came over from Italy or Spain or something like that. They've talked about learning that language. We have a few that were interested in the stock market. We had one young man talk about getting his referee license. So there's been quite a wide variety from that standpoint. And it's been it's essentially served as a bit of a talking point for the following coach then to pick up from where we've left off. So we'll document the conversations and that information that will be shared with all of the coaches. So, I can look back and see what was shared with Andy, what was shared with Nick from that respective student athlete and kind of pick up the conversation from there. So there's some continuity to the conversations as well as we've gone through this at the same time.
Next question from Greg Hunter. Go ahead, Greg.
Coach, just your general recruiting philosophy, irregardless of the virus. Obviously, at UC, you depended a lot on international players. What are your thoughts as you get here? Has it changed from when you were at Charleston?
No. With respect to West Virginia and to Charleston, it won't have changed at all. Quite simply, it's to find the best players that are available within a global market and very much including here in the US. And then once they are identified, determine if they're the best person or the best fit from that standpoint as well. They've got to be more than just a good player. They've got to be a quality person as well. And we've got to see a lot of the character traits that we think would align with the culture that we want here. That method at Charleston led us to recruit more internationals because with respect to what we had available to us and what we could recruit, it had its challenges, quite honestly, to out-recruit somewhere like WVU for a quality domestic player was incredibly challenging at Charleston, whether it be the Division II stigma or other circumstances. It had its challenges and that really led us to recruit internationally. and keeping in context that, that soccer, football is the most popular sport in the world, everywhere but here. And it certainly has grown here incredibly. And there are, without doubt, incredibly talented players here within the domestic market. I think it's about being very, very realistic about what you have access to, how you can be efficient with your time and energy from a recruiting perspective. And that perhaps was why we went as internationally as we did at Charleston. And as I alluded to earlier, when it comes to what we've recruited here at WVU in this recruiting cycle, you know, to get the job around the end of January and then to have a period of assessment to then determine what our needs were from a recruiting perspective, realistically, in my experience and with my understanding of the recruiting process at that stage, it's incredibly difficult to, you know, to recruit a domestic player that has the quality to come in and make a massive, massive impact straight away, that isn't already committed somewhere. You know, realistically, right now we're turning our attentions to 2021s, doing what we can, given the current pandemic, to identify some of those players and see where we're going to invest our time moving forward. And I do predict that things will become perhaps a little more domestic for us from a recruiting perspective. But in this initial class, given the timing of my transition into the position, I think we had to go go overseas to get the best possible players that were available at that time.
And your final question from Mike Kazaza. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, Dan, how are you?
Doing well, thanks.
This may be hard to answer because you don't know exactly when you'll get them, but just listening to you talk, it sounds like naturally people are not going to be in tip-top shape and probably optimistic projections. It could be middle July, perhaps August, before you get people back on campus. What do you think soccer will look like? And what I mean by that is I don't think it's going to be five-a-side soccer and it's wide open and people are just bombing it over the defense, but maybe teams pack it in because that just lowers the margin of error. Do you have any feel for how it might look when you actually do get to resume?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think, fun enough, we were just discussing that the other day. We're so encouraged by what we've recruited. We do believe that our depth will be a strength next season and something that we will have to rely on at the start of the season. To be honest, that's been a strategy that we've had over the last 6 years at Charleston, and one that's worked incredibly well for us, for the most part, allowing us to get off to a good start at the beginning of the season when quite simply players are still getting up to 90 minutes fit, and then utilising that on the back end of the season in December when the volume of games is so high that, you know, the game or the performance has the potential to deteriorate because of the condition of the players. So that's something I'm familiar with, I would say, something that we have openly talked about maybe relying upon a little more than we have in the past. You know, what that does for other teams and how they change is going to be entirely up to them. The intent will be, you know, what measures can we bring into place and take to make sure they come in the best condition that they can. You know, they're going to get a summer program here soon that we believe will help facilitate that development and that conditioning come August. And, you know, if they're in a position where they can show us early in preseason that they're in good condition, the intent will always to be, you know, play with a high intensity and to feel like we're one of the fittest, if not the fittest team in the country. I'm incredibly greedy in terms of what we want and ambitious in terms of what I want for this program. So ultimately it is a running game. So they have to come in good condition and they have to be prepared to do that. Now, if they only have the capacity to do that for 20 minutes and not for a full half, I believe that we will have the depth this year to be able to combat that and accommodate those challenges in terms of where they're at in terms of peak physical condition. So yeah, I don't think we're in a position right now to make too many predictions in terms of what that looks like. We need a clearer picture of what preseason will be. As I said, it's somewhat contextual. We have a young man committed from Holland, for example, who's already been told they can train three times a week. They just have to stand 2 meters apart and they're not allowed to do anything in this context of like a competitive game scenario. So you know, for someone who probably hasn't kicked a ball for 2 months, that must sound like amazing. But that still isn't a real game. So there is progress being made and glimmers of hope throughout the world, really, in terms of sport coming back to the fray. So again, we're optimistic that the climate and the pandemic will be in a position where we are back up and running at full capacity in August.
And that was West Virginia men's soccer coach Dan Stratford. Thanks for listening.